Wing Leadership Podcast, episode 58.
This is the Lean Leadership Podcast. Equip yourself with the tools for success in your team's lean journey by learning from the world's top lean professionals. Listen at the risk of improving with your host, Chris Burnham.
Today's guest is Bob Rush. Bob has more than 40 years of manufacturing experience in the high technology segment, working with products ranging from disk drives to computers to lasers and finally to electric vehicles. He has a curiosity-driven personality, loving to learn new things. He's held roles ranging from shipping clerk to VP of operations. His personal lean journey began with an introduction to Kaizen through the Shingijutsu consulting firm more than 25 years ago. He has applied those lessons learned and has spread the love of lean as much as possible. Bob is presently doing some consulting work, but spends time mentoring and advising the next generation of lean leaders. He has been active on LinkedIn and frequently posts one of his semi-amusing pieces called Lean Observations of an Old Guy. Bob lives in Murfreesboro, Tennessee with his wife and youngest son, with three older sons living their own lives. His time is spent mostly with his dogs, Callie, a 9-year-old golden retriever rescue, and Apollo, a 4-month golden retriever dynamo. Here's our guest today, Bob Rush.
All right. Well, we're here with Bob Rush. Bob, we talked briefly about who you were in the intro, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how lean and continuous improvement is a part of your life?
Okay. Well, I've been in manufacturing a long time, and I wandered across lean in the early 90s through Shingijutsu. I had a client that was a supplier to Boeing, and they invited the supplier to send somebody to a Kaizen event. And that was my first exposure. I always tell what I consider an amusing story. I met the sensei. I had studied all night. I didn't know what this Kaizen was, so I studied all night. Met the sensei in a team setting and immediately fell asleep and woke up to laughter. And the interpreter said, well, the honorable sensei would like to know if you give your client a discount while you sleep or do you charge full rate? And I, after turning about 47 shades of red, apologized, and everybody laughed, and it was a good time. And that was my first inkling that this lean thing might be a little different than what I was used to. The sensei then insisted that we go to Gemba. That was it. If somebody goes to sleep in a meeting, well, then obviously the meeting's too long. Let's get out of here. So, and then he immersed us in it. He insisted on 12 to 14 hour days. And he also insisted on accomplishing things. He didn't care what, he just wanted things accomplished. So it was an eye opener. And I thought, this stuff really makes sense to me. I mean, first of all, if you can fall asleep and they laugh about it, that's the place for me. So, and then this whole doing thing really resonated with me. Part of my background is industrial engineering. So you go to the floor and you do things and, hey, wait a minute, I get to work with these guys and, oh, I really have to listen to them. So yeah, that was my introduction. That sensei ended up becoming my sensei and we worked together for, over 25 years before he decided that, you might know enough now that you might be able to survive a little while. And he turned me loose with his well wishes and a tearful goodbye. I have to be honest. It was really emotional. And then he put a condition on it, and that was that I had to do more than I had been doing. I always preached lean, but not to a wide audience. It was always to the people I was working with. And he thought, well, you got a good message. You should be spreading it more often. So hence, I'm on your podcast today, and I've been with Mark Graben on a podcast, and I wrote some notes on LinkedIn about my observations. I call them observations of an old lean guy, and I just tried to spread the word more. And I mean, now I understand intimately what he meant, and that is that we're all given a gift, and we need to gift it, re-gift it. In this case, re-gifting is a good thing. So I've been trying to spread the gospel. We'll see if it works, but I'm having fun doing it, and that counts.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say as far as podcasting senseis would go, Mark would probably be mine.
Yes.
When I knew that I wanted to start a podcast, the first person I reached out to was Mark. So Mark, I listen to your podcast. Can you give me some advice? But I guess his style of being, creating a forum where people can talk about lean kind of always appealed to me. Mm-hmm. And with that, just the idea is that that's why I started this podcast. People have stories. People, and people relate to stories. So it's we could absolutely do a textbook type podcast where we get into really technical things. But I think where people relate to is that I'm not alone in this thing. That there's you can borrow experience from someone else along the way.
Yeah, yeah. My sensei taught me that you should be able to identify where you stole every idea that you use. And if you can't, then you're doing something wrong because somebody's done it before. You should be out there finding out what those people are doing. So,
great advice.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, before we get started in the interview, where are you talking to us from today?
I'm from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I'm a longtime California resident. And my wife retired, moved here. No state income tax, so to retirees, that's good. I had an employment contract with my last employer, Tesla, and finished that up and then moved out here. And I do a little consulting work. I do a lot more mentoring and things like that. But I'm in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, Middle Tennessee.
Middle Tennessee. I'm in the western portion of the state today. I'm over in Memphis.
Are you
so,
really?
Yeah, I am. Wow. I also enjoy the benefits of no state income tax. Mm-hmm. Property taxes are a little bit higher than other states I've lived in, and sales tax. I figure they're going to find a way to raise the revenue one way or the other. It's just
they're going to get their money. It's which label do you put on that?
Yeah,
money?
Exactly.
So.
Well, Bob, can you share with us a quote or a mantra from a favorite leader that you've admired and tell us why you chose that quote?
Okay. It's one that I heard recently, and it was actually on a Mark Graben podcast with Tom Peters, who I've studied since the 70s. In Search of Excellence was a management guidebook in Silicon Valley in my day. Everybody read it. We all were astounded by these stories. So, and he says, if you're working in the distribution center 1 a.m., and you're not having unmitigated fun, you should go home, get a piece of paper, and write your resignation letter out because you should not be a leader. And I agree with him 110%. If it's not fun, if you're not, you know, with that silly grin on your face going, ah, man, this is a big problem. I love this. Let's go, guys. You probably shouldn't be in a leadership role. So.
Well. I completely agree with that. As being the leader that's been in a warehouse at 1 a.m. in the morning, I can tell you that the benefit to me, I loved it because I was on the floor. I wasn't in meetings. No one meets at 1 a.m. in the morning.
Absolutely.
I would come home the next morning and it's a little disconcerting because I would come home and I would be having a beer and my wife and child would be sitting across from me eating breakfast. But, how was it? And I'm like, I'm up to my elbows in problems and I love it. Right.
Yes.
It's because the people that are there want to be there. And I think that's a great piece of advice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was taught that the sole purpose of our existence is those people. It's not our ego. So if you have a huge ego, you probably shouldn't be in this type of work because you'll never get ego satisfaction. So where you get it is seeing that light bulb turn on with somebody when they fix a problem, or even better, when they realize there is a problem. They didn't know it before. Now they understand why it's a problem. So those are the moments I live for. When that light bulb turns on, you go, I remember now. Yeah.
I think that my lean and continuous improvement journey changed for the better at the point I realized that I derived more joy and success from watching other people succeed than being able to pat myself on the back or list out my own accomplishments. My accomplishments are I helped insert name here solve this problem.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, you always want to talk about the results of your teams or whatever. You're just there to help them achieve results. You're not there to get the results. Although, you know, sometimes you roll your sleeves up and you do something, but it's really about, you know, grooming the next generation. 1 o'clock in the 1 o'clock in the morning is a great time to groom the next generation because they're all
The ones that are there want to listen and they want to learn.
Yep. They're trying to figure out why this guy's here. Of course, if you just walk in unannounced and start taking notes, they get nervous. But if you come up and say, "Hey, I was told that you might be having a problem like this. What do you think? You know, what's your ideas? And is there somebody else I should talk to?" And then pretty soon, you know, people will gather around you and they will then insist that you do something.
One of the things that I've always kind of coached the people that I've worked with is that it's important to write stuff down. If somebody tells you something, when you write it down, they realize that it sends that message to what you're sharing is important. But when you break out that pen and that notebook, start off by saying, "Hey, I'm going to take some important notes. If you want to look at what I'm writing down, just ask me. In fact, I may ask you to look at it to make sure I have it right." And that that humility piece goes a long way. But just being transparent about, "Hey, whatever I write down, you can take a look at."
Yep, I agree.
Well, one of my goals of this podcast, Bob, is to help other lean leaders resonate with your experiences and your journey, because I believe that there's somebody out there right now that's going through something that you've been through before.
I agree.
Can you share with us the story about how or why you chose to do lean and continuous improvement work?
Well, I got started with the Kaizen event. And the sensei saw something in me that I didn't know was there. Of course, I probably wouldn't have known what to look for. And he actually invited me to one of his other engagements. And just he wanted to see what I could do. And he had me do a stand in circle, look around, what do you see, those kind of things, right? And my first list was not impressive, to say the least. Even to me now, I would have been, "Oh my God, this guy does not get it at all." But he was very patient. He just had me stand in circle for a lot longer. And then about halfway through, it clicked on that you're just watching. You're not trying to figure anything out. You're not trying to fix things. You're not trying to find out who the weak link is or anything else. All you're doing is looking, just looking. So what I did was I started looking, just let it flow. Good, bad, indifferent. It's just this is what I saw during that time. And that's when it really clicked for me, was that this thing could be different. Now, I had used parts of lean when it was called world-class manufacturing. I was an employee of Hewlett-Packard who was big on world-class manufacturing. They went deep into it. Dr. Schoenberger was a consultant to HP. We heard him speak many times. So when I'd seen it, but now the sensei was showing me that it's a system. It's not these little bitty tools. It's a system. And the stand in circle forced me to look at it and go, "Oh man, this thing is a lot bigger than I ever imagined." And then I'm a very curious person. I have to know why. And five whys resonates with me. So you're like, "Yeah, that makes sense to me." So, and I just started digging into it. And then as you saw, things get done and people, you could see the behaviors change, because really that's what we're in. We're in behavior changing business. As I saw that, I just realized this is really fun. It was really fun. And it was. It was 4 a.m. In a factory in a snowfield in Pennsylvania. I'll never forget. This California boy was in this factory and going, "I don't know why I'm here." But then we started finding these problems. And we were fixing them as we went. We weren't like sending notes to a quality engineer somewhere to analyze for us. We were just doing it. And it was the first place I ever heard this saying, "It's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission." And we just went at it. And just, it was so fun. And that's, the fire started. I just couldn't get enough then. So my employment history is I work a job, then I go do consulting work. And what I try to do is apply what I learned at that last job into other things to see if they really work or not. And then I reach a point where I go, well, it's time for another job. Let's see who's hiring, and off I go. So I switch back and forth. So I've been exposed to probably 2,000 or 3,000 factories worldwide. Just so you get to see the good, the bad, the indifferent. I have seen what happens when people get excited, when they feel empowered to change things. You know, one of my favorite things is when somebody on the floor says, "You mean I don't have to ask somebody to do it?" No. And if somebody yells at you, you tell them, "I told you to do it," and send them my way. So, because that's part of my job is to run interference for them. So, yeah, that's when it started really clicking for me. And then, of course, you dig in. Like a lot of beginners, I thought that the lean tools were the end-all be-all, and they're not. The system is the end-all be-all, and you got to figure that out. So my last job, I had a lot of interns that worked for me, working on Kaizen events and things like that. And I had some that I called punch card lean. They would print out the 25 top lean tools, and they'd want to put a check mark next to each. Oh, yep, 5Y, check. You know, pokey yoke, yep. So, and you're like, no, I'm more worried about you using the right tool in the right way than I am about what tool you know. And if you don't know a tool, guess what? It's called learning. You're going to learn it. So, and you know, a great way to learn, if you make a big mistake, you'll learn. And if you don't, you're in the wrong business. Yeah, so, yeah.
I'm the product of a lot of experience, and you get experience out of making a lot of mistakes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I love that talking about tools. I think I suffered from the same affliction of, you know, being, now I learned this tool, I'm going to apply it everywhere versus, you know, that deep understanding of what's the problem, what's the challenge.
Yep.
And then, you know, the tool is correct when you can explain what the tool is, mm-hmm. why it's appropriate, mm-hmm. and then get the head to nod up and down and says, yeah, that's right. Versus, I don't think that'll work. I'm not sure that's the right, or someone else tried that here before.
Yeah. Well, yeah. 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 Not like we hear those words in lean very often, right? So, yeah. Yeah. I like the feeling when somebody uses a new tool and then come away with an understanding of it. So a lot of people, I gave a lecture at an APIX conference about lean. So, and I aimed it towards supply chain because APIX. And the people in the audience just wanted me to tell them exactly what to do to fix a problem rather than talk about lean and this. So, and what I had done is I'd done a presentation on some of the projects I had worked on, where we started, where we ended up. And then one guy actually asked me at the end, "I need the list of solutions that you use for each problem." Oh, really? Well, here's my business card. See, Bob Rush Consulting.
Yeah.
But I'd rather have people say, "Hey, that was interesting. I got this kind of problem, and I was thinking this. What do you think?" You know, because in lean, we're training people to think. We're really training them to think, to see and think and do. So, you know, plan, do, check, act.
Yeah, one of my mentors never called it, always going to Gemba, direct observation. Mm-hmm. And the reason he called it direct observation was when you gave it an abbreviated direct observation, it was do.
Yeah.
And so he goes, have you performed direct observation? And it stuck, but it wasn't, I didn't go look at a video. I didn't go. I didn't set up the cameras and then go off and work on a spreadsheet. Like, I sat there and I interacted with the environment.
Yep.
I had conversations with people. I asked good questions. And a good question. Good question is one that says, "Help me understand. You seem like you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Can you help me understand why you're doing this way?"
Yep.
And most of the time, people want to tell you about the work that they're doing and why they're doing it that way. And more importantly, If they don't think it's right, they'll tell you why it's not the right way to do it.
They're going to tell you why and what they think should be done, which is what you want. You want everybody thinking that way. I had a boss when I was an industrial engineer. I had a boss that would wander by our bullpen area, and he would leave a little note on your chair. When you get back to your desk, come see me. So whenever somebody went to see him, there was never anything important. He was just, and he finally explained to us one night over a cold beer that all he was doing was seeing how often we went back to our chairs, because your customers are not in those chairs. They are on the floor.
Oh, man, that is awesome.
There were a couple of us that had figured this out before he said anything, and we would never go to his office. And he'd come out to the floor. If there truly was something, he'd come to where you were, whatever work cells you were working with. He would come there and ask you the question. So he probably figured, these guys figured this out. That's great. Yeah, come see me. So you're like, nope, not going anywhere near that office. So.
Podcast listeners right now, if you're we're not saying if your boss leaves a note in your chair not to come see him. You just need to understand or her. You don't need to come see her. You need to understand the ecosystem in which you're you're operating in.
Right? Absolutely.
And it's probably wouldn't be a bad idea to say, hey, I took a moment off the floor. I stopped by my desk real quick. I saw a note from you. What do you need?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yep.
Well, Bob, I imagine as everyone goes, we go through setbacks, make mistakes. Some people call those learning experiences. Some people call them formative experiences. But can you share a story with us about what you consider your biggest career setback or your biggest mistake with Lean and Continuous Improvement and what you learned from it?
Oh, boy. You say biggest and you're like, well, to me, this was the biggest, but it had little impact. But personally, my biggest one was I had a job where lean was part of my job, but only part of my job. I actually started out in charge of supply chain. So I figured an easy way to do this is to start using some lean tools in supply chain. PFEP, plan for every part, you know, S&OP and things like that. And we're going to bring this and shortages will go down. Inventory will go down. On-time delivery will go up. So, and my biggest mistake was I assumed that everybody in the company had signed up for this journey. And in my mind, I know, you know, lean is like a five-year cycle. You're going to do 5 years, you'll have great accomplishments, and then all of a sudden it's got to start over. You hit some roadblock, some barrier, and then it's got to start over. So in my mind, I knew it. Unfortunately for me, I failed to educate the CEO in this. So his expectations were not being met. And my biggest mistake was I didn't educate him soon enough. Now, I did get to educate him. We did a one-piece flow lesson because I wanted to change into sales from straight line assembly. And he wasn't convinced, you know, because he had set up the assembly lines and they've been working for 20 years. And blah, you know, we've always done it that way here, right? Everybody's heard that one. So I figured out a way to show him. So I set up a class one-piece flow and I made it really simple for him. The flow was a customer wants a signature of everybody on this team on a piece of paper. So, and one side's going to do one-piece flow. One side's going to do batch. And then typical one-piece flow lesson. Right in the middle of it, I threw a quality, got you in there. Oh, I forgot to mention, the customer wants the CEO's signature at the top line. So, and just did that. And, of course, the one-piece flow guys could handle it. They were hammering away. The batch guys were struggling, so... And he went away. He never said anything to me, but all of a sudden his thinking started changing. And I will say that he started listening to our customers a lot closer than he had been. So my biggest mistake was not training him sooner. I should have taken him. And I know in my heart that if you really want to be successful in lean, you got to get the company leader. to buy into it. He's got to buy in. Otherwise, you're going to end up with just pockets of lean, and that's not good. So, and that was fairly recently. So I was fairly far along in my career when I discovered that.
Well, Bob, a couple of takeaways there. That's why we call this the Lean Leadership Podcast, because we understand that leadership is probably the key ingredient with any continuous improvement effort. You have to have your leaders on board. And it's as teachers, the other piece here is that we're teachers. And with the knowledge of continuous improvement, our obligation is to educate anyone and everyone that's hit by the value stream.
Yep.
Which means that you're responsible up in the organization, you're responsible yep. down through the organization, throughout the organization, and just having a conversation and saying, "Hey, can I share with my experiences and what I've seen?" And I think most leaders I've learned think in terms of business problems; they don't think mm-hmm. in terms of lean problems.
Mm-hmm.
So to tag on to that, you don't say, "Hey, we really need to get to one piece flow here." With your process, it's, hey, we need to figure out a way to deliver to our customers more rapidly. That's a business problem. They'll connect, and then they understand that you're solving business problems and you're not applying engineering tools to everything that you do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Right after the one piece flow lesson with him, we had a plant in California and we had a plant in China, and he owned the company. His son was technically my boss, and loved working for him, with him. And his son took away a strong enough lesson from that he insisted that I take my manufacturing engineering manager to China and convert that factory to one piece flow. And his thinking was, if they can convert China, traditional Chinese assembly, into one piece flow, it'll work in California. So, and we did a 1 week Kaizen, and we changed the largest volume line over to one piece flow. And all the typical results, inventory reduction, on time delivery increase, quality improvements, all those good things. So headcount reduction. So, and then my boss learned a lesson in that if you reduce headcount, you got to find something else for those guys to do.
Yes.
What are you going to do with them? So we started coming up with a plan. And we introduced all kinds of new products, all kinds of new processes. So, and we even introduced the process in California, where we could turn a product in 3 days, up to 5 units, to get into labs, universities, anybody doing R&D type work. We wanted to be in there. We wanted to be the first one. So while our competitors were trying to quote, we were delivering units into their process and their experiment. And we always wanted them to think of us as the solution. We are the solution. You call these guys, they will fix the problem for you. And it's because of lean tools that we did it.
So I know normally my next question would be is, can you tell us that aha moment with your lean and continuous improvement journey? But it sounds like you dropped about 3 or 4 of those aha moments there.
Oh, if you don't have it on a regular basis, you're doing something wrong. I don't know how many times I've stopped and went, oh, I should have known that. So,
well, do you have a lean or continuous improvement pet peeve or something you see frequently being applied or done wrong?
Oh, boy. Mark will tell you this one. My strongest pet peeve is within the lean world when somebody calls themselves a sensei, a lean expert. I actually met in my travels somebody that called himself a waste guru. And to me, I thought, well, if I was going to use that title, it'd be waste elimination guru. But no. My sensei told me that we're all in this together. There's some of us that have been at it longer than others, but that doesn't make you an expert, because an expert is somebody that just shows other people what to do rather than learning. You were talking about teaching. Well, I call it coaching, and coaches learn from student players all the time. And if you're not learning, if it's not two-way, you're not doing it right. So, yeah, expert, that Mark and I had a profound discussion about Sensei one time, because some of my guys at Tesla were calling me Sensei, and I took it wrong, and he showed me that it was disrespectful for me to take it wrong. It wasn't. I didn't insist they do it. In fact, I feel uncomfortable with it. But so yeah, we've had that discussion, and he knows it. So
yeah, I think that goes along with a perceived imbalance of power. Mm-hmm. So, what I hear you saying is that humble inquiry, being humble about what you're doing, is readjusting that relationship back to even, back to par, where it's, hey, look, you can call me sensei, but today you're the person that does this job every day. Yeah. I'm learning from you. Please, yes. You know. You're actually, if we're going to apply the term expert, it would be you. Can I learn from you today?
You're the job expert, and I'm learning. Yeah. So, yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's the best part of the job, though, is learning and seeing all these different types of jobs and processes and learning from them. It's fun. I use humor. I mean, anybody that's worked with me knows, you will know when Bob's around, you will hear that laugh. I have a very distinctive laugh. You will hear it. And you will hear it sometimes at what you think are the worst possible moment. But he just thinks it's funny. The machine broke? That's funny. It's funny. So now we got a problem. Now we got to fix the problem. Let's fix the problem. So yeah, I use humor. So I figure if somebody is comfortable with you telling jokes, and at my last company, the guys that work for me, we would get together every night and had a daily review. It wasn't formal. It just came about, and we all enjoyed it. But it also became time to insult Bob. And these guys took great joy in insulting Bob. And we would laugh so hard about it. We had a great time. But if they can sit there and joke with their boss, they can probably sit there and tell their boss the most horrible thing out there. And that's what you really want. You want them to tell you the horrible things. So, yeah. The nicest thing my boss...
No, go ahead.
The nicest thing my boss there said is, Bob, you cannot pass Muda without stopping and wondering why. Why? And he says, it will not be your area. There'll be three of our other guys working on something, and you'll just stop and you get that. And he says, the guys used to call it the oh my God moment. Bob's going to assign somebody something. So why? So I want to know why. Somebody's going to Gemba and telling me why. Let's go. So
what do you consider the most important thing that you've learned in your career journey so far, Bob?
In the whole career journey, I'm going to say humility is the most important thing. Early in my career, I was destined for great things, according to my boss. I was going to rise to the top and that. And I discovered that I didn't want that. I'm an ops guy. I love operations. Put me in that distribution center at 1 a.m., I'm a happy camper. Put me in a board meeting at 9 a.m., where I got, no, I'm not a happy camper. I'm not, no. So I just figured humility. I have talents, and I'm pretty skilled at what I do, but I'm humble about it. And I think it comes across, so.
Well, that kind of dovetails into the next question is, what piece of advice would you give to someone who's just starting out with lean or continuous improvement?
Prepare yourself for disappointment. My wife, we have been married 26 years.
Congratulations.
So our relationship parallels my lean journey. And just the other day, she told me, you know, this whole lean thing, you're always failing. You are always failing. So, and she says a lot of these people use the words, but they don't know what it means and they don't do anything about it. So how do you do that? You pick yourself up and you go do what you got to do. So get used to it. No, I tell people if you are one where failure really bothers you, if you take it with you and it tugs at you, don't get into this business. Because our whole job is based on failure. Even if you fix this problem now, You're going to have another problem tomorrow morning.
I think it's not failure if you learn from it. Mm-hmm. And so it's learning constantly means failing constantly. It's hey, I've run the experiment.
Yeah.
From that standpoint.
Let me know how it goes.
So just along the lines of that, I haven't been married as many years as you have, but still, I'm grateful to have a wonderful spouse that supports me and letting me do this.
Yeah.
And I catch myself when she's talking to me, I have to raise my hand and say, do you need me to be in problem solving mode or am I in just listening mode? And no, I mean, but seriously, it's, that's a different skill set, right?
Oh, it is.
And, sometimes she just wants me to be there and just listen. And I appreciate that.
Yep. So my wife and I have an agreement that my lean ends at the entry door. So I can do lean all I want in the garage. But once I come in here, no, there's no more of that. So I just listen now. I nod yes a lot. So, and if she really wants me to do something, she'll tell me what she wants me to do. And I just, yes, dear. So, yeah.
That may be the piece of advice we want to give to someone just starting out. Do not take 5S into your spouse's space, period.
Man.
Husbands, don't go into your wife's closet.
Yeah.
Wives, don't mess with the husband's toolbox, or train set or whatever his thing is.
The dishwasher was a fight.
So I think that's a good parallel is that realizing that when you are doing this work in a professional environment, it's respect for that person's space that you're working with them in that space, not lean and continuous improvement is not something that you do to someone. It is something that you do with someone.
Absolutely.
And that's important to know.
Yep. Yeah, it is. So you're just lucky enough to be along for the ride. I mean, that's just how I view it. So part of my lean in my garage is my notebooks. I have boxes of notebooks. And I can go back and go, oh, I remember that. Yeah, Charlie said such and so, and it turned out Charlie was wrong. That was what caused his problem.
No, my favorite is, with the notebook, is being the person that takes notes, sitting in a meeting, and someone misses a commitment to the group. And you say, well, you committed that you were going to do that last week. I said, no, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
My notes here clearly say that you committed that you were going to do this. What do your notes say? Mm-hmm. I don't have any notes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh. All right. Yeah.
I win.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always done it pencil and paper. So at my last company, it was Tesla's high tech. That's the highest tech company. I was one of the few guys wandering around with a notebook and pencil on the floor. Everybody else had their little smart devices out or their tablets or something like that. They couldn't keep up with me. You can't type as fast as I can write, dude. Trust me. So,
They are not a sponsor for the podcast and not plug, but the Friction Clicker 7 erasable pen is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
I love this thing. It's my pen.
Okay.
It's now my pen of choice.
Get some.
Yeah. But leaning continuous talk here, Bob, every time I would, a pen would run out of ink, I would just throw it out. And then one day an ad shows up on Amazon and says, get the refillable cartridges for the Friction 7, 7 ink pen. And I hear I'd been buying pens for, X number of dollars, and I could have bought the refills for a fifth of that. Right.
Yeah.
So now I have the same pen. It's just on a new iteration of refill.
All right.
What piece of advice would you give to someone who's a little bit further along in their career? I mean, I know you shared with us that your learning experience was recent, but is there something that someone's told you recently that's helped you out?
I have a gentleman here in town who's on a lean journey. And one of my standard questions for people that I'm going to mentor is, tell me about the biggest lean project you'll ever work on. What is that? And I have gotten literally thesis papers, 4 pages of notes, things like that. And this guy went away. And he came back, and we take walks. There's a greenway here in town, Stones River. We walk along the greenway. And I said, so what's the biggest project you've ever worked on? And he smiled and he said, it's me. I'm the biggest lean project I ever worked on. And I said, ding, 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 winner, 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 chicken dinner. You're the first guy that got that answer this quickly. Way to go. How did you come to that? And he said, I thought about the root cause of all my problems and realized I'm the root cause of all my problems. Therefore, I'm the biggest project. He changed my thinking to think of myself as a root cause of a problem. So, yeah. In fact, I'm going to try to meet with him later today.
Well, you have to let him know that in a few weeks when this podcast comes out that he can listen and that you'll give him credit without saying a name or names have been changed to protect the innocent, right?
But that changed my thinking that to think of yourself as a problem. That's pretty innovative thinking, I thought.
First time that anyone has ever answered that question that way on this podcast is assigning root cause to yourself in the way that you think. And I think that that's a beautiful piece of advice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bob, do you have a favorite book, author, or mentor that you would recommend to our listeners to check out?
Books. I've read all the lean books. So I would, any books by Art Byrne, I recommend because he's a lean leader. He really is a lean leader. But the one person in the lean world I really look up to, and I've mentioned his name several times today, is Mark Graben. Mark and I connected through my posts on LinkedIn, and he wanted to do this book called Practicing Lean. And he took my posts, edited them, made them coherent. I was stunned that my words could read so well. And he has been really a sounding board for me over the years. Just, sometimes when I'm just down, I've had enough and I don't think I want to do this anymore, I can talk to Mark or listen to a podcast or read his blog or something. And it always resonates with me. Now, Mark and I have a lot in common in that we were engineers in manufacturing to start with. And so we kind of speak the same language, and he's gone off into the healthcare very well. But I find him to be articulate. He's fun to be around. He really is. We've had dinner several times when we cross paths and travel or something like that. So that's the one guy I always recommend. You know, follow him on LinkedIn, connect with him, read and listen to everything he does because he's a good source of information in this world, and he's connected to everybody.
Yeah. But part of that being connected to everybody was also, he's very accessible.
Like if
you have a question and you email him, he will email you back.
Yes. The real live Mark. I mean, the real live one, not some robot or
There's nobody managing his, or ghostwriting in his name.
No. So, he and I have had all kinds of discussion. I was on his podcast, My Favorite Mistake, and he labeled the episode Bob Rush, Lean Manufacturing Expert. And we had a discussion about the word expert. So, and he laughed and he goes, we've had this discussion before, haven't we? Poor choice of words. Sorry, big guy. So, I think the world of Mark. He's a good sounding board, and he has helped me kind of raise my level of ideas about lean or how I fit in lean. So instead of being the guy that's at the distribution center at 1 a.m. and working with five guys, I should be a guy, even though I'm at the distribution center, I should be working with hundreds of guys. How are you impacting those guys? And he helped me see that it was okay. There wasn't, so humility is a big thing to me. And if you're, worried about your followers or something like that, how are you being humble? But he helped me through that. So, yeah. And he's a really nice guy. I mean, I like Mark. So,
yeah, I have the benefit of his mentorship. And then now we're involved in some similar projects as well. So I'm grateful for him as well. Good piece of advice. I'll make sure to put links to Mark's podcast and his blog in the show notes page Actually, Mark was the very first episode of this podcast when I started it out. So
was it fun?
Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is.
Just checking.
Well, here's an interesting different question, Bob, is okay. that we know that magic wands don't exist, but if they did mm-hmm. and you had one that you could use with a organization or an operation that you're working with, what would you typically wave the magic wand at first?
This is funny. I got asked this by a potential client. So, and I keep telling people the next real frontier of lean is going to be government agencies, government itself and government agencies. And if somebody said, Bob, here's your magic wand, you're going to go fix something really quick, I would fix the U.S. government. I would make it more efficient. I would make it closer to its customers' needs. I would eliminate some of the bureaucracy. So, very early in my career, I worked for a guy who was a Stanford professor and got elected to the House of Representatives for one term. And he only lasted one term because he suggested that the government hire old-time purchasing agents, not even buyers. He called them purchasing agents, pay them on commission, let them buy government goods on commission, and they get a percent of everything they save. The government will save billions of dollars. So,
and the, even after the
voters were out, yeah. You're gone. Yeah. And I thought, to this day, I still think it's a brilliant idea, man. Go save some money. So, yeah, that's one area I would.
There are some really good examples of lean in government at the local level that I've read about and that I've seen, had the experience to listen to people talk. But that's a great place to wave the magic wand at from a federal level.
Yeah.
Bob, how can people connect with you if they want to learn more about you and what you do, or if they have a question for something we talked about today?
LinkedIn is definitely the way to get a hold of me. And it's under Bob Rush. I'm pretty easy to track down. A lot of people do.
Yes, you are. So, yeah. And you will answer.
Right? I do answer. Sometimes not the way you might like, but I do answer. So, yeah. And I try to help everybody. So.
Well, Bob, I'll make sure to put a link to your LinkedIn in the show notes page for this episode.
Okay.
As one Tennessean to another, thank you for spending time with us today on the podcast. I've gotten a lot out of this conversation. I hope our listeners have as well. And I look to have you back again sometime soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the time. I really appreciate it. Good luck out there.
All right. Thanks.
Go have some fun.
Yes, sir.
I want to thank Bob for being a guest on the podcast today. Be sure to go to the show notes page at leanleadershippodcast.com and check out the links on how to connect with Bob if you have a question about what we talked about today. As always, I welcome your feedback on how to improve the podcast. If you like the podcast, make sure to go to podchaser.com/leanleadershippodcast and leave a rating for the podcast. Thank you for listening, and until next time, seek progress over perfection.
Thanks for listening to the Lean Leadership Podcast with Chris Burnham. Get more info, resources, tools, or connect at leanleadershippodcast.com.